gospel slash praise team slash let's say hallelujah college choir. I am so grateful to have the opportunity to address you on this beautiful Sunday morning. Rain and clouds notwithstanding, it is a good day. It is a good day. Now, I continue to have the dubious distinction of following tough acts. So I get to stand here and try to engage you following such an amazing performance by our children. But in many respects, I'm grateful. Well, in all respects, I'm grateful always. But I'm grateful that they had an anointing upon their hearts, their minds, their voices, their spirits, their souls today, and that they have already successfully praised and engaged you in the praise service, because the secret this morning is I am not a pastor. I have not received a calling on my life to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. Rather, my calling is to teach. And so I'm glad you got your praise on, because I likely am not going to be able to do what Pastor Chris can do or what my young people can do. I rather want to share with you for just a few moments about the importance of Black History Month. Again, allow me to thank Brooklyn Northeast, Pastor Chris, and all those members who are assembled here, our friends, our guests. You know, while Chris was speaking earlier, he was gracious in acknowledging his mother, the phenomenal woman that she is. But the thing that he left out is that she is a trustee at Benedict College. So thank you so much for being here and for your unpaid labor on behalf of Benedict College. We are indeed grateful. Certainly, it's a joy to see all of the staff, faculty, alumni, most especially the students, on this wonderful morning to think about Black History Month. As we go about the process of celebrating Black History Month, we often are called upon to reflect. To reflect. To think and to look back. We have 28 days out of 365 to focus on the unique contributions of our people to the United States of America. If we're lucky during leap year, we get 29. But generally speaking, we have 28 days to celebrate all the contributions of African Americans in this country. The Merriam-Webster's Dictionary defines history as the study of things past, including people, places, and events. Synonyms for the word history include past, former days, old times, yesteryear, and the good old days. However, for an entire race of people, these are merely catchphrases and trite terms. They are wholly inadequate to capture the depth and breadth of the experiences shared by people of color in this country. For us, the word history often evokes words and phrases like Middle Passage, slavery, and Jim Crow. The celebration of Black History Month beckons us to reflect on Bloody Sunday in Selma, Bloody Monday in Danville, the Orangeburg Massacre, and the Tulsa Riots. It is a painful history, watered by our ancestors' tears, fertilized by their blood, built on their backs, and littered with their broken bodies. Is it any wonder that our young people, the millennials, as we like to refer to them, resist the annual walk down memory lane that demands the reliving of our past in ways that for them often feel disconnected and unrelated to their present-day reality? Perhaps it's because we fail to connect the past to the present in ways that are meaningful to them. Why do we insist on remembering our past rather than focusing on the here and now? We do it because the past teaches us valuable lessons that are as relevant today as they have ever been. Like the Constitution and even the Bible, the words remain unchanged, and yet they guide us into the present and through to our future. Our history has modern-day implications. Moreover, our history is important because those who plowed the fields, shed the tears, endured the oppression, broke the barriers, sat in, marched on, paved the way, and laid the track
deserve to have their sacrifices acknowledged and respected. More importantly, they deserve our gratitude. History teaches us about triumph and resilience and serves as proof that change is possible, that victory is sweet, that dignity is not measured in dollars, and that forgiveness is free. Proof is an interesting concept. Those of us who believe in the rule of law understand that all too well. It seems that seeing is believing to many, if not most people. After all, doubting Thomas had to see Christ's nail-scarred hands in order to believe in the resurrection. What will it take to prove to generations with boundless potential that their power is indeed limitless and that their birthright was sealed by the blood of their ancestors? It is theirs for the taking, and the record is clear. The mere acknowledgement of Martin Luther King, Rosa Parks, and Barack Obama during the month of February will not suffice. Our young people must be taught who they are and whose they are 365 days of the year. Shamefully, we are failing in this regard. Our public schools often give short shrift Black history in their lesson plans. We skim over the middle passage and we whitewash slavery. Just this year, my 9-year-old daughter covered a unit on slavery. She brought home her study guide and prepared to take a test. One of her questions was, name the 5 ways slaves avoided work. The options were, they broke their tools, they faked sick, they tried to run away. Now, I don't know what history book you're reading, but if any slave that I ever read about broke their tools, faked sick, and tried to run away, the penalty was harsh. We are sugarcoating, soft-pedaling, and giving short shrift to our history. It is little wonder that our kids do not carry themselves as the kings and queens they are. We fail to make clear to our children, Black children, that their ancestors have overcome unbelievably inhumane treatment, and in a relatively short period of time have demonstrated their exceptional capacities in every area of human endeavor. Consider the timeline. Black people in this country were enslaved from 1619 to 1865, 242.34 years, with no ability to read or write, much less make independent decisions for themselves or their families. We endured segregation from 1865 to 1964, 100 more years, during which time we were unable to vote or engage fully in the economic prosperity that America is so popular for. Arguably, we have been free since 1964 with the passage of the Civil Rights Act. This is 2018. We have been free less than 50 years in this country. In less than 50 years in this country, we have demonstrated again and again our ability to overcome seemingly insurmountable odds to achieve the highest levels in law, medicine, science, math, the arts, sports, and even politics. In less than 50 years with the right to vote, we elected the nation's first African-American president. This country has seen and borne witness to our awesome capacity, and to some extent, there are those who fear it. There are those who fear our awesome capacity. Recent years have witnessed a regressive mentality, toward our people. As it relates to equity, justice, and diversity, there are those who believe we have come far enough. In fact, we've gone too far and are taking something away from someone else by our own achievements. Is it little wonder our children are undereducated, that their light is doused, that their abilities understand their brilliance, their beauty, their talent, and the full measure of their capacity. What a frightening thought. If our children knew who they were, if our children knew from whence they've come, if our children knew and truly understood the awesome power of their ancestors and on whose shoulders they now stand, what would happen in America if every black child exceeded his own potential? What an awesome day it would be. Our opportunity, no, our duty, is to ensure that our children, our black children, have access to information and education about their own history, their own legacy, their own ancestry. One of the most famous quotes by Nelson Mandela is about education. Education is the most powerful weapon which you can use to change the world. Having led two historically black colleges and universities, I believe that, and therefore have committed myself to providing educational opportunity to a population of low-wealth, first-generation students of color. It is my personal mission to ensure that my babies know where they come from. I, like many of the students educated at Benedict College and campuses like it around the country, I'm a first-generation college student. My father, a coal miner, had a fourth-grade education, and my mother earned her bachelor's degree in nursing at the tender age of 56. Despite the limitations of their circumstances, they were committed to ensuring that my brother and I had the opportunity to attend college. More than that, they prepared us by creating a thirst for education in us as young children, stoking that desire until it became a burning fire. Despite that desire for education that was created within each of us, the reality of our financial circumstances threatened to douse the fire. There was no college fund waiting for me, nor did my parents have the ability to simply write a check or swipe a card to pay my tuition. We were, as it were, described at the time, working poor. Still worse, national educational funding policy during the Reagan 80s shifted away from Pell Grants and other supports for working families, particularly families of color. Had my father been unemployed, I could have received help. But the penalty for my father working was that I could not get any assistance to go to college. The disincentives our system builds for African Americans within our social economic policy are staggering. I therefore pursued a plan B. I decided to enlist in the military and take full advantage of the educational benefits while serving my country. Now, that clapping may be premature, because though admirable as a goal, that was not God's plan for me. Now, I may look, PT probably wasn't for me. And I think God understood that. Days prior to my swearing in this, my swearing in ceremony for the United States Air Force, I received a letter from West Virginia State College, a small HBCU located in southern West Virginia that afforded me a full academic scholarship. The rest, as they say, is history. I completed college in 3.5 years, enrolled in and completed law school, practiced law for nearly a decade before changing careers, returning to school to earn a doctorate at Vanderbilt, and ultimately achieved my dream of becoming a college and university president. Who would have imagined that a little black girl from southern West Virginia would grow up to become the first female to lead not one, but two of our nation's historically black colleges, shattering glass ceilings that existed for more than 100 years at each institution. The words improbable, unlikely, and impossible have been systematically replaced in my vocabulary by words like commit, achieve, and succeed. This is my story. And the end has not yet chapter finds me at the helm of one of the most valuable and purpose-driven institutions in the country, Benedict College. West Virginia State, the institution that nurtured me, Florida Memorial, where I previously served as president, and the mighty Benedict College, the HBCU that put the BC in HBCU, are all historically black colleges. In short, these institutions, founded after the Civil War, were created to educate former slaves. While some would suggest that these institutions are no longer necessary in a post-racial society, I beg to differ. I beg to differ. These institutions are needed now more than ever because it is on these campuses that the full measure of our history is taught. The whole story is taught. To be sure, young people of color are introduced to Martin, Malcolm, Rosa, and Sojourner. But they are also introduced to Henrietta Lacks, whose cancerous cells were harvested without her knowledge or permission, and led to medical breakthroughs including the polio vaccine, cloning, and genetic mapping. She nor her family were ever thanked for her sacrifice. Students on HBCU campuses are taught about Alberta Williams King, the mother of Martin Luther King Jr., who was murdered in church while playing Amazing Grace on an organ during morning service. Newspaper accounts of her death refer to her only as, quote, mother of slain civil rights leader, as though her only purpose in life was to serve as the vessel through which Martin traveled. Students on black college campuses are taught about Sarah Collins Rudolph, the fifth little girl who survived the Birmingham church bombing. The sister of Addie Mae Collins, who died in the blast, Sarah lost an eye and was in the hospital for nearly 2 months after the bombing. She lives in Birmingham to this day, and her name is seldom mentioned. Most importantly, students on black college campuses are introduced to themselves as people of color in a country that seldom acknowledges their brilliance. They are taught to stretch themselves intellectually and to challenge those things that seem unjust or worse, illegal. This month, a documentary film by Stanley Nelson is being released entitled Tell Them We Are Rising. We hosted a screening on the campus of Benedict February 1st, and the film will be shown on public television later this month. I urge you to watch it. The film presents historically black colleges as havens for black intellectuals, artists, and revolutionaries, a path toward promise for the American dream. Black colleges and universities have educated the architects of freedom movements and cultivated leaders in every field. They have been unapologetically black for over 150 years, and for the first time ever, their story is being told. Tell Them We Are Rising reveals and amplifies the critical role of HBCUs, not only in the identity of black Americans, but to the nation as a whole. HBCU alumni from the 1940s through the 1970s provide firsthand accounts of their transformational educational experiences, their experiences which are marked by freedom, joy, and often struggle. Through showdowns with authorities on and off campus, HBCU students advance the cause of civil rights. Though largely ignored by the mainstream media, the Orangeburg Massacre, that occurred on the campus of our sister HBCU, South Carolina State, is but one tragic example. Unarmed students were gunned down by police officers using the highest caliber ammunition available, that which is typically reserved for big game. Most were shot in the head, the back, and the balls of their feet as they attempted to flee. This occurred 2 years prior to the Kent State shootings, and yet our children are never taught about Orangeburg. Our children are never taught about the struggles and the sacrifices on the campus of South Carolina State University, led by students from both Claflin and South Carolina State. I dare say Voorhees and Benedict played a role as well. This is the history that our students do not know.
HBCU students, however, have access to their history. HBCU students understand where they came from. HBCU students were the heart of the struggle and should be acknowledged as such. Nelson and his co-writer Marsha Smith begin the HBCU story in the post-Civil War South and bring it up to the moment, suggesting that the Black Lives Matter movement is the newest iteration in a legacy of social engagement and self-determination on the part of these amazing students. This has always been our story. These important institutions were and are our hope. We have a duty to protect and to preserve them. Nelson caps the film with a contemporary sequence that suggests both renewed hope and uncertain survival. With almost no discussion of the reasons for the school's failures, the cameras observe the abandoned and crumbling buildings of a shuttered HBCU. But others are still thriving. There are exuberant and tearful scenes of moving in bay for arriving freshmen. Affecting testimony of a couple of students who explain why attending a Black college is important to them. One spent her high school years as the token Black. The other had never before had a Black teacher. From a different time and perspective, they echo the relief and the excitement and the hope that alumni from decades earlier recall about their HBCU experiences. Amid setbacks and challenges, the cultural heritage that began with the contraband schools is thriving, and it is still as urgent as it ever was. You see, HBCUs in this country have been at the heart of educational opportunity, cultural identity, and advocacy for people of African descent. We are much more than bands, choirs, Greek letter organizations, and the center of culture and fashion. We are where dreams are fulfilled rather than deferred, where movements are born and sustained, where talent is developed and displayed rather than hidden. We are the places where faith is celebrated, not separated. We are not the answer to every social problem or ill, but we do provide a safe space within which to ask the questions that, if answered, just might change the world. Our young people have not experienced slavery, Jim Crow, du jour segregation, denial of the right to vote, and lynchings. But they must understand the historical context of these events, no matter how painful, because the answers to the problems they face today, stop and frisk, racial profiling, voter suppression, and ongoing economic disenfranchisement, are found in that history. The issues have changed, but the solutions have not. Through discipline, organization, resilience, study, determination, and faith, we shall overcome these challenges too. It's who we are. It is in our DNA. This month, as we celebrate Black history, I encourage you to take a fresh look at these venerable institutions, whether it is through the eyes of Stanley Nelson or your own. What you see may surprise you. You will see a vibrant ecosystem where diverse students express themselves in a myriad of ways. You will see scholars, activists, and artistic genius. It is my hope that you will see a place worthy of your support. Despite the challenges, these mighty institutions continue to answer the call of our people, Black people. Black people who are better and stronger and smarter and prouder because historically Black colleges and universities exist. I challenge you not to be passive observers this Black History Month, but to join us as we continue to make history on HBCU campuses. Volunteer your time. Mentor a student. Hire an intern. Purchase a book. Endow a scholarship. Support a production. Attend a sporting event. Worship with us. Pray for us. Know that Black history is made on the campuses of historically Black colleges and universities. History is not yesterday. History is today. It is now. It is forever. And if we are to build a legacy as significant as that which has been laid forth before us by our ancestors, we must keep looking, fighting, praying, striding, reading, talking, learning, marching, sitting, standing, and holding.
excuses. There is only opportunity. We face many, many challenges, but none is insurmountable. We are free. We are a free people, a free mind, with agency to take charge of our own lives, our own futures, our communities, our churches, our schools. Lest we bemoan the inadequacies of the curriculum that our students are taught, rather than getting involved. Rather than getting involved. Talk to your teachers. Challenge these assumptions. Defend your children. Their futures depend on it. We no longer have to sit idly by as our children are victims. We have the opportunity to change the history of our people so that going forward, the history books will reflect that we did the right thing in the right way for the right reasons. I would be ashamed if my children read a history book 50 years from now and it said that Benedict College closed on my watch. Not on my watch. Not on yours. Nor should it say that any historically black college in this country closed. There are 101 historically black colleges left in America. 101 mighty institutions left in America. While those who would suggest that to segregate our students on a historically black college campus does them a disservice, that it teaches them to function only in an environment that looks just like them, I would ask you why no one questions the existence of Jewish colleges, of women's colleges. It is only historically black colleges that are questioned. Could it be that they are afraid? That if our children learn who they are and whose they are and from whence they've come, they would be unstoppable. They would be unstoppable. The time is now. The opportunity is ours. I, for one, will not be content until our institutions are strengthened, our futures are secure, and our children are recognized for the mighty kings and queens they are. I trust that you will join me on this path. I trust that you will pay particular attention to the young people, not only in this church, but in this community, and those who matriculate off campuses like Benedict College. And oh yeah, you may be Alan and Voorhees and more and some of those other ones. I like to be equal opportunity in this. But the truth is that all HBCUs are important. We saw something wonderful happen just yesterday, the day before in the news. There was an announcement made that the storm-related debt that is carried by so many HBCUs throughout Mississippi and Louisiana would be wiped away. Would be wiped away. Now, if that ain't a miracle, I don't know what is a modern-day miracle. And though Benedict College is not one of those institutions, I rejoiced. Because a win for one HBCU is a win for all HBCUs. So even if you didn't get to go to West Virginia State or to Benedict College, know that whatever institution you are loyal to, and I hope that you support, is an important and powerful institution, even if it happened to lose yesterday to Benedict College in the home team matchup between Claflin and Benedict that was nationally televised. I'm sorry. I just can't. I just can't. I try to be decent and good and graceful and kind, but you know, sometimes you just gotta share the good news. I mean, that's my job, to share the good news, that our kids are performing on the courts, in the classrooms, and all over this community. And I beg you. I'm not asking you. I'm begging you for your support of these critical institutions. Our future depends on it. Our children depend on it. Join the fight. Do not be idle. Do not simply read history. Join us in making history. Be a part of our children's future. Put your imprimatur, your stamp, your signature on a young person today. It will change not only their lives, but it will change the course of history for our people. I thank you for giving me the opportunity to share with you during this Black History Month program. It's the beginning. You still have time. You still have time. Get on board and support these institutions. God bless you and keep you. I thank you.